Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with the trial balloon floated by the White House and Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid on Wednesday. And that's that the White House is apparently vetting Republican Nevada Governor Brian Sandoval for the Supreme Court vacancy. The idea, of course, being that this is an olive branch by Obama. See, he's not going for some radical lefty, and Republicans would really be in the extreme to try and block somebody like this if, in fact, he were the pick. Sandoval is a Republican, but he's one that has had tax increases. He's socially liberal and that sort of thing. And, Jim, ultimately, this kind of throws off the narratives a little bit from what we've seen from Republicans and Democrats, although Republicans came out yesterday and said no hearings, no vote before the Sandoval news came out. But in the end, it could actually be good here because it would give Republicans a chance to say no to one of their own and say, see, this is about a principle, not about a nominee. And you've got Democrats out there who probably won't be ready to go for the mat for a Republican to get on the Supreme Court.
It's one of those rare moments where you see something that really kind of scrambles the expectations of this. There might be some Republicans who would say, yes, let's confirm this guy. I think Senator Heller from Nevada might have a very tough time saying, no, there's no way I can support my friend and governor for the Supreme Court. On the other hand, you know, look, there's notice this guy is he's a pro-choice Republican. He has made some decisions that some conservatives would not like. So it's not like there'd be a no-brainer case for Republicans. They'd be able to make the objections. Let's not forget, this would probably upset more than a few progressives who have dreams of another consistent Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan type. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you'd get a guy who, if nothing else, has a relatively pro-business record as governor and his limited experience on the court and as a lawyer. But wait, there's one more great wrinkle to this, Greg. Back when the Obamacare decision came down, Sandoval said he thought Obamacare was unconstitutional. Can you picture, Greg, Obama picking a nominee who thought his signature healthcare legislation violated the Constitution?
Unlikely.
The other thing is, it's almost unthinkable Sandoval would flip on Heller, flip on the D.C. Gun ban decision. He's, you know, almost unthinkable he'd be anything other than a consistent vote in favor of the Second Amendment, which would irk Mike Bloomberg and gun control advocates and things like that. So I think just because of the sheer degree it would scramble everybody's responses, I don't think Obama would do it. And if he does, I think there's kind of a very interesting question for Republicans to ask about this. As much as you may like Sandoval and others, do you really think Barack Obama thinks Brian Sandoval is the absolute best choice to be on the Supreme Court?
No, that's a political choice for sure.
I mean, it's kind of a transparent choice of trolling or of trying to tweak the opposition. And are you really supposed to use Supreme Court nominations for the sole purpose of irritating the opposition party? Right. I mean, at some point, it's, you know, it says a lot about Obama's presidency. It almost felt like he wasn't taking it seriously.
The argument, of course, that Obama could make if he were to nominate Sandoval is that he was confirmed unanimously by the Senate back when it was in Republican control. The other thing, of course, is the main reason you should run from this if you're a Republican is that Harry Reid was smiling about it and seemed genuinely excited about the prospect of it. And if Harry Reid is gung-ho on board, it's best to sprint in the opposite direction.
Fair point. Fair point. The other thing I would add, Greg, is that for a long time before Reid announced he was retiring, there was thinking that Sandoval might run against Reid someday.
Ah.
Sandoval obviously pretty happy being governor, but at some point he could contemplate running for a Senate seat and give the Republicans a good chance of picking up that second Senate seat in Nevada. Probably won't happen this year, but you know, it's some future cycle. If you put him on the Supreme Court, he's never running for Senate ever.
That's a good point, too. Calculations all across the board. So speaking of political calculations, let's move to the bad martini now. And it was just a couple days ago we were talking about some of the buzz circulating around that Marco Rubio should convince John Kasich to abandon his presidential bid and agree to be his running mate. And they could run as a ticket and Rubio could collect the vast majority of however many Kasich supporters there are out there. And then allegedly the vast majority of the other candidates potentially as they drop out. That hasn't seemed to gain too many legs at this point, but now all a pundit over at Hot Air is suggesting, well, why would Kasich abandon his bid to go with a guy who's pretty much a long shot at this point, even though he might have the second best odds in this race? Trump's obviously the favorite. Why wouldn't Kasich abandon the bid for a much better odds of becoming the VP nominee for the guy who's leading, and that would be Donald Trump? So the question, Jim, is not whether that would be a good idea for Kasich, but why everybody thinks Kasich is the best choice to be the VP going forward.
This has been one of the great giant assumptions of this entire cycle, and it's kind of nagged at me, Greg. Everybody seems to think that either if John Kasich is the nominee or if John Kasich is the running mate, then Republicans would win Ohio. Does he improve their chances? Yeah, probably. He does have a high approval rating in his home state. But we didn't see an enormous movement in the numbers in Wisconsin when Paul Ryan was on the ticket for Mitt Romney. Some people might argue, okay, he's a congressman. He's not elected statewide the way a governor is. This is driven by the fact that Kasich has won statewide twice. Well, he won in 2010, which was obviously the year of the Tea Party, this giant Republican wave. It was a really good year for Republicans. To Kasich's credit, in a way, there were times his approval rating in that first term dipped really low. He tried a referendum, got rejected. He got into a fight with the unions. And John Kasich, there was a time when Democrats really thought they were going to beat John Kasich and win back the governorship in 2014. And then they nominated a guy, I believe it was Ed Fitzgerald, who did not have a terrific record and who kept making one odd error after another, including the fact that he'd been driving without a driver's license for years and years. My favorite moment was when he was found in a car with a woman who was not his wife at 3 a.m., and he insisted they were totally not canoodling or doing anything inappropriate or anything like that. The Ohio Democratic Party was wildly disorganized. They were extremely dispirited. They knew it was going to be a tough year. And John Kasich won by a ton. And because of this, John Kasich walks around calling himself the Prince of Light and being totally convinced that he is phenomenally popular in Ohio. Well, part of it is that people like John Kasich, but part of it is that they really didn't like his opposition. So how much of this is John Kasich being a swell guy, and how much of this is just being extremely lucky in the people you run against? We know in a presidential year, turnout is going to be very high. Obviously, Democrats are going to bring out every vote they can in places like Cleveland. It is not going to be easy to win Ohio, and I really don't like the idea of Republicans putting Kasich on the ticket, thinking he's a magic bullet to win one of the most important swing states. Would he help? Yeah, probably, but there's a lot of other stuff that goes along with Kasich, including expanding Medicare and Jesus told me to do it and you guys need to read the good book and, you know. But like, Greg, did you know his dad was a mailman?
I've heard that.
He should mention that sometime. Obviously, there are a lot of Republicans who like to win Ohio because if you win Ohio, you have a very good chance of winning the presidency. Does it seem like a perfect poetic justice for them to put Kasich on the ticket and then turn around and lose Ohio? Jim, worst of both worlds.
Jim, it's hard to quantify this because you never know exactly what influence a running mate has. But since 1960, when Kennedy picked Johnson and probably won Texas because of that, is there any campaign since then where you can absolutely say, yes, picking that running mate absolutely won the state for that guy? Because it certainly didn't work for Mitt Romney by picking Paul Ryan in 2012. And I don't think it's worked for a lot of different folks over the years who I think were going for that strategy.
Yeah, over time, geographic diversity has become less and less important. And I think there's actually probably a good reason. The country's politics are more nationalized. Conservatives in Ohio aren't so different from conservatives in Alabama or California or other parts. Very often you make your pick for who you think is most qualified to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. In the case of John McCain, it's not like he needed Alaska. It's not like Obama was really worried about Delaware's three electoral votes in 2008. You go for somebody who you think is, you know, ready to be president and who strengthens the ticket and puts you in the best spot to win and also to have a good and successful presidency. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, you don't just look at a map and say, all right, what state do we need and who do we think can deliver that? So I think you're right. We are not as geographically focused. And I don't think I'm not so sure that voters think geographically. I think if Kasich's on the ticket, Ohio Republicans will vote for him and maybe some Ohio independents and Ohio Democrats will vote against him. And I kind of think that's the case for almost every other option you have. But, you know, Trump Kasich, boy, that, you know, Greg, you know, we had a buffet table of options this year and we've chosen to order off the menu. Main course that's raw and a side dish that's overdone.
Let's go to the crazy martini now. And this doesn't seem like a political martini at first, but I think we can get there. Jim, it's been said by some folks on the campaign trail. Kasich has said it. Ben Carson has certainly said it. Marco Rubio says it to some extent. We got to be able to bring people together. Americans are too divided over issues, and there should be certain things that we can all agree on and be able to move forward on as a society. And one of those, until very recently apparently, used to be that Americans love cereal. You get addicted to Cheerios when you're a baby. When you go to college, you're basically forced to eat cereal because you don't have a lot of money and your parents aren't there, so you can eat cereal at the cafeteria. three meals a day. It's fantastic. You can keep it next to the ramen noodles in your dorm room. But, of course, along with many other aspects of the millennials, they tried to ruin everything. This is from the New York Times. A couple of different things here, the second of which is by far the most disturbing. First of all, they're so health conscious that they're basically turning breakfast food into things that aren't fun, like hot grains, smoothies, yogurt, and breakfast sandwiches. But here's the real fun part. The dream of all these cereal companies is to capture the all-powerful and elusive millennial eater who just isn't all that into cereal for breakfast. It's just too much work, for one thing. Almost 40% of millennials surveyed by Mintel for its 2015 report said cereal was an inconvenient breakfast choice because they had to clean up after eating it. Jim, those 5 seconds rinsing out the bowl, that just wears you out.
Greg, I realize I'm a little slow on the uptake here. I just want listeners to picture me just staring at my microphone. Just, and really, that'll say, oh, I don't know what to do with it. No, really, if you're too lazy to make cereal, I don't know what to do with you. I don't want to wish millennials ill, but at that point, you can't help someone who won't help themselves. And if you won't help yourselves to a bowl of cereal that I've seen kindergartners make, because the cleaning of the bowl, every once in a while, yes, the Cheerio, like you leave it in the bowl, gets stuck there, and it's a pain in the neck to try to, you have to get a spoon and kind of chip it off, and then have to let it soak in the sink for a while. But you know what? This is part of being a grown up. Greg, I'm just feeling the need to write a whole new chapter for a new edition of Heavy Lifting.
Yeah, I think you've got your epilogue ready to go here. But here's the thing. Here's the political aspect of it. Does this make more sense now that Bernie Sanders is doing so well with free everything when kids can't even rinse out a bowl and a spoon and stuff it in a dishwasher? Or God forbid, if they don't have a dishwasher, they actually use some detergent and a brush for 5 seconds.
In my presidency, all the bowls will be cardboard. They'll be recyclable. You'll just put them in the recycling bin. You'll never have to wash a bowl again. Yeah, that's the thing where you're kind of like, oh, and you can't find a job. Oh, you poor baby. You can always go work at a local restaurant and be a dishwasher. I guess not. You can't be a dishwasher. I guess that's too much to ask. So,
on that depressing note, Jim, go get a bowl of cereal. I'll do the same. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.